Conciliums with Pete and Charlie.
I'm Pete.
I'm Charlie.
The unity of knowledge.
That and a whole bunch of caffeine is what's going to get us through this.
Last week was a mess, Pete.
It was a hot mess.
It turned out that you just didn't like a movie that I liked, and so...
Well, you don't like that book about reverence. You can't even complete it.
You've jumped my segue.
Oh.
I read a book that you suggested in your list.
Mm-hmm.
I've already read, Altered Carbon. We talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to read Reverence, Renewing a Forgotten Virtue.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. Oh, it makes me tired just to think about it.
Yeah, it's an academic textbook kind of thing. I agree. It's a little boring.
And I am an academic. I mean, I like an academic text.
You are a nerd of the highest order.
Thank you. But this book just did the opening, the beginning, the intro, the whole discussion of, hey,
yeah, wasn't about ancient Greece at the beginning?
This is what we're going to talk about. That's what that intro was about. And I was just like, oh, I don't want to. And I couldn't quite figure out why.
Okay.
One
and notice I'm not the least bit offended that you didn't.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
Because I think, as we learned last week, your appreciation for something is context dependent.
It's very
allow
context
me
dependent.
To illustrate.
Okay, hit it.
The movie with J-Lo and Ralph Fiennes, Made in Manhattan. Have you seen this film?
No. Last time you brought it up, I expressed shock and dismay that you were comparing
it's
something.
It's just a modern remake of Cinderella.
What were we talking about that you brought up?
I don't
up,
know,
Made in
but
Manhattan?
It was not a genre-defining film. I don't think it won any awards. I don't think it was critically acclaimed. But I liked it because it was a feel-good story, and I had a bad week. So if you go watch a movie when you've had a bad week and it's a feel-good story, it makes you feel better. You remember it. You relate to that
film. Let me tell
film.
You something, Pete. Next time you need a feel-good story, you're feeling down, say it's mm-hmm. Christmas and you've got the blues, just watch Die Hard. It'll fix you right up.
Is Die Hard a feel-good story?
Oh, yeah. Die Hard's the best Christmas movie
There's
ever made.
There's a lot of violence, though.
What would culture be without violence? You ever read Cinderella?
It is pretty nasty, actually.
Those girls cut off their toes to be able to fit into the glass slipper.
They cut off their toes to fit into the glass slipper? That's the original
story? In the
story?
Original fairy tale. Yeah, one stepsister takes off a bit of her heel to try and fit, and one takes off one of her toes to try and fit. But the prince notices that the slipper is filled with blood.
Is that really the story?
That's my story.
Wait, excuse
Anyway, there's a lot of violence around. So, Reverence.
Oh my God. So the proper remake would have starred Jean-Claude Van in a world where some crazy
now,
bitches
David,
shave off their toes.
David
just
Cronenberg
to fit in the...
should have made a Cinderella
okay.
live action version.
Who made what's the one? The cartoon, something about Halloween and Christmas.
Oh, Nightmare Before Christmas.
Nightmare Before Christmas.
Tim Burton.
Tim Burton should have made that film.
Yeah, you know what? Tim Burton.
Sweeney Todd made Cinderella.
Yeah. Although I have not seen a lot of Tim Burton's most recent movies, and from what I understand, he's kind of losing his edge.
Oh, well, he did do Sweeney Todd. That was pretty... Yee.
Well, you know.
Well, the story's pretty...
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Nasty. Okay.
Okay, so, Reverence.
Okay.
I am not sure why I could not get into the book.
No, that's okay.
But I have a theory.
Okay.
A lot of the beginning was summed up in this kind of wheedlingness that I'm about to describe. Hey, let's talk about reverence. And listen, I want you to know it's not what you think it is, okay? It's not like this and it's not like that, okay? It's something very special. It's a very different thing than what you think. It's not like this and it's not like that. But
make it sound like it was written by an Amway salesman.
But that's
okay,
what
that's
it felt
fine.
Like.
That's fine.
And I think that's why I could not really get into it. And I jumped ahead a little bit and ducked around, but overall, it just seemed like a person starting to... It seemed like low-rent C.S. Lewis, because it felt like what he was doing was...
As in
getting me
C.S. Lewis's books like Mere Christianity, things like that talk about ethics and morality?
No, it seemed like low-rent Chronicles of Narnia.
Really?
Because it seemed like what he was doing was trying to set me up...
Well, there was no story.
As the reader, he was trying to set me up for understanding the point of religion and the passion of religion without, like, hey, we don't have to believe in God to have God-like feelings, was sort of what I was getting out of his discussion of reverence.
Okay.
So I just, my body rejected the text.
Like an allergic reaction.
Exactly. I had
yeah,
anaphylactic
okay.
shock. So let's go with why did you think of that book? Why was that book important to you? When did you read it, and what did it do to you?
I'm trying to remember the context, but one of the early examples that he used was a funeral. That regardless of religion or religious tradition or social tradition, there are certain things in where reverence is appropriate and is universally illustrated. And a funeral is one of them.
You've jumped the gun a little bit.
Okay.
What is reverence? And why did the discussion of it get to you?
What is reverence? Yeah, see, I prepped 3 weeks ago for this thing. So
but just think, just remember, you know, what you, because that's the other thing. Like reverence, he does not really define reverence except in the negative throughout the introduction.
Yeah. Well, for example, the best example, and as a comedian, I can really relate to this. He said that it's not good to be irreverent. Irreverent is disrespectful, right? But for comedians or pundits or writers who make fun of that which is stupid and ignorant and ridiculous, that's not being irreverent. That's being reverent to the ideals that this is hypocritical and we should be making fun of it. To me, that was a license to kick butt. Maybe that's why I liked it.
Do you know the one true Scotsman or the true Scotsman fallacy?
Is this an adult film you starred in
when you were
in college and you needed the money?
No, it was after college. The true Scotsman
thing.
The
true Scotsman fallacy. That's better than the true Scotsman phallus.
Scotsman clad in kilt. Left a bar one evening fair. The thing about the true Scotsman is that it's the argument that, this person is not part of the group that they declare themselves as because no true Scotsman would ever do that. He's not a Scotsman because no true Scotsman would act in this way.
Okay.
Thus, you can ignore the idea that Scotsmen or Scotch have... This is terrible.
How much Scotch did you have before you started to explain this?
Not enough, clearly. The idea that by saying, this thing which is labeled something is not that because something is really not that way. You know, we call this reverence, but it is not reverence because real reverence is like this.
I think what he implies is that reverence should be reserved for things that are deserving of that level of respect.
Who decides that? That's the other thing. Like, where does that come from? And what does he, be reverent to the things I'm reverent to?
Apparently, Paul Woodruff, author of Reverence, Renewing a Forgotten Virtue.
Wait, to be reverent to Paul Woodruff?
Yeah, he's an academic from University of Texas, as I recall.
Yeah.
I just thought it was an interesting idea that... to me, that's what he's saying, that there are certain things deserving of reverence, and things that are silly and stupid and hypocritical are not, so it's not irreverent to make fun of them. I used to be proud of being irreverent.
In fact, that's in the log line of this podcast, that we're an irreverent podcast.
So, actually, the author, Paul Woodruff, would disagree.
He even said what we call irreverence is not irreverence.
Right. What he calls reverence is reverence to the idea that we should be making fun of stupid stuff. And we do. I think we do. I think
we'd like it to sounds very circular to me. What are you...
Uh-oh. Another tautology.
What do you have reverence for? And how do you know that you have reverence for it?
So I'm going to take his example of a funeral. I have reverence for people and their connections with other people and their contributions to this planet. And when they pass from this planet, I think it's appropriate to take some time and be reverent about what that means. Now, I think it should take a different form. Some people have this artificial view that you should sit in some house of worship and be depressed. I say that's a load of crap. You should take time to remember your friend and colleague. And that could include telling dirty jokes about stupid stuff they did in a bar while you're drinking. That's the beauty. This transcends any religious or cultural ceremony. You do what is right for that person. And anyone can be involved. Yeah. Right? Anyone can...
It also seems to transcend any sort of definition or absolutism. Right, it does seem to just be. It seems to be pornography. You know it when you see it.
You know when you see it.
So what?
Potter Stewart quote.
Nicely done. Yeah. So what is this about? What is this book about?
If now it's you're about confusing anything. Me. What do you think? So what do you think his definition was?
Well, I thought that he
it was all negative.
I thought he relied on the sort of the Greeks. He relied on the cradle of civilization. He relied on the way that people understood the world pre-scientifically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely pre-modern.
Okay.
And I'm a person who stopped reading in the introduction, so I can't. I might come up with some of his argument, but it'll be fake. You know, mm-hmm. That's why I'm asking you. What is reverence? And not by example, Pete.
I'm an engineer. I learn everything by example.
That seems.
Well, then you have a legitimate criticism. Maybe only by using, negative examples, he did not fulfill his mission of telling us what reference.
What are you looking for on your computer?
I'm looking for.
Everyone can tell that you're distracted.
I'm looking for my notes I wrote down on this stuff, because you were not ready 4 weeks ago.
When did you read Reverence?
10 years ago.
What was going on with you at the time?
I was starting to be a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
And maybe the idea that to be his redefinition of irreverence appealed to me. Because so, let's face it, most comedians are called irreverent.
I've never watched The Family Guy, right? Or American Dad.
What is wrong with you? Is this why you don't like Ted?
I would say the reason I haven't watched The Family Guy and why I don't like Ted all starts from a different place. That mm-hmm. is, you know, collectively. Anyway, I just haven't, right? But from what I understand, at a certain point, that humor relies almost exclusively on referencing other things at moments that it doesn't seem like it would fit.
Yeah, some of it does.
Right.
But you like that kind of weird arcane reference, though.
I've seen you enjoy it. I do like arcane weird references, with a point.
Okay.
So there's a kind of comedy that is... there's also those disaster movies out there. Have you seen the movies that are basically full of references to other movies?
Yeah, like the Scary Movie series.
Yeah,
and things like
or it's another disaster movie or yet another teen movie, things like that.
Yeah.
So this comedy...
I mean, Airplane was the original one of those disaster movies.
Yeah, but what Airplane did was it took a disaster movie and then played it for absurd laughs. You know, mm-hmm. The Airplane is actually a story. You could tell the story of Ted Stryker without the jokes, and it's kind of nice. It's kind of a good disaster film.
You're right. You could make it into a serious film where you had a guy and the pilot gets sick and there's the only one pilot aboard, but he's got psychological issues.
Yeah, he's got PTSD, right?
Right, but it's
and
not
a drinking
as good
problem.
As Stop Calling Me Shirley. Leslie Nielsen.
Surely you're not serious. I am serious. And don't call me Shirley. No, but the deadpan absurdity of Airplane has very little to do with the completely uninteresting retreading of it's a disaster or no, not it's that's the movie you like. I have to look it up on the internet so I can speak of what I'm talking about. There's a pair of directors that their movies are simply recreations of other movies for comedic effect, and everyone's pretty sure that a disaster movie by Jason Friedberg and Aaron Seltzer.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know these guys' movies?
No.
Here we go. Super Fast, Best Night Ever, The Starving Games, Vampires Suck, Disaster Movies, Meet the Spartans, Epic Movie, Scary Movie 4. Oh, there we go.
Oh, Meet the Spartans was a takeoff on 300.
Yeah, but it was then filled with, you know, references to every other movie. They had a Paula Abdul, a Britney Spears, an Ellen DeGeneres, a Hunchback, Dana Cook, a Bond villain, Spartan Woman, Ugly Betty, Lindsay Lohan, you know, these...
Yeah.
It's just, you know, reference. Ryan Seacrest is in there, you mm-hmm. know. So even Mel Brooks would be a little bit embarrassed The heroic Spartan king Leonidas, armed with nothing but leather underwear and a cape, leads a ragtag bunch of 13 Spartan misfit warriors to defend their homeland against thousands of invading Persians, including Ghost Rider, Rocky Balboa, the Autobots, and a hunchbacked Paris Hilton. That's
okay.
This comedy.
Okay, yeah. I'm familiar with it.
Okay. There might have been, when you were becoming a stand-up comedian, a desire not to fall into this shit.
Yes. But you know, people like Gallagher. You know what I'm saying here? Maybe this is the Gallagher of movie remakes.
Okay. Well, let's get off that then. There's comedy that is about surprise and shock and you know, blowing a raspberry in the middle of a Shakespeare monologue.
Okay.
Right? And then there's comedy that is transgressive or disorienting and, you know, Andy Kaufman.
Yeah.
Right? That kind of thing.
Most people use the phrase weird. You're sounding like a true academic today.
Weird is a useless word. Come on. it's a useless word.
It resonates with me.
What's weird, Pete?
Anything that would get me smacked with a wooden or metal implement in Catholic school.
Right. So,
so it's all context.
Yeah, exactly. Context. You've got
if Sister Mary Neri didn't like it, it was weird.
And that should be reason enough not to use the word weird to describe anything anymore.
Sister Mary Neri was a frightening human being, but she was a good math teacher. You know, just because I pick on the nuns because they were kind of scary, I had some really good teachers in St. Stephen's.
Why did reverence resonate with you when you were thinking about being a stand-up comedian?
Because it was that idea that, and I think what Paul is trying to say is reverence is reserved for those things that are, and you're right, he goes back to the Chinese and ancient Greek traditions that, you know, reverent for things that are beyond us, right? So that's where the funeral is a relevant example. You know, the death, the miracle of life, these sorts of things. But I think it's fine to revere certain principles, right? Equality of opportunity, right? You know, these sorts of things. I mean, people were shooting at police cars in Ferguson after the 1 year anniversary just the other night. And it's not irreverent to be pissed as hell. If you live there, I think there's definite evidence to suggest that not only in Ferguson, but in places all around the country, there is racial prejudice. And in fact, I think that's the tip of the iceberg. Racial, age prejudice, gender prejudice, socioeconomic prejudice. I think there's prejudice just because Mr. Burns doesn't like the cut of your jib. So was it Albert Finney who said, "I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore"?
No, it was Peter Finch.
Peter Finch, we should be mad as hell. It's not irreverent to pick on institutions. And I think what resonated with me years later was when Tim Lee, who we mentioned before, having trouble with people attached as producer, said, and I'm sure he wasn't the first person to say it, but he was the first person to say it to me, and it makes a lot of sense, is that humor or comedy is the combination of truth and absurdity. This is why Jon Stewart is so successful. There is so much absurdity in politics. It's a ripe target for people who will make fun of that which should be. So he's not irreverent. What he is, he's reverent to the truth, to basic principles that government should help people and not try to screw them. And so to call him irreverent is incorrect. That's what Paul says, and I agree with that. That's what resonated with me right there. Boom, there it is.
Okay. So one of the reasons I think that I don't really care about a lot of the stuff that you were just describing is because very early on, I'm either because I decided or because I just got swept away in my, you know, my pubescent angst. I just decided that...
you were far from puberty when you read that, though.
No. I'm saying in the past.
Okay.
I just stopped caring what was told mm-hmm. to me, right? I stopped caring how people described what was important and what, how one should
right.
be.
Right, he's really labeling a word. Yeah, and you well, say, I don't care what you call it, I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but wait, but this is more complicated than just that.
Okay.
I was told that drugs are bad and sex will kill you and, you know, go to church on Sundays and, you know, and that,
I was too.
And
was
that,
too.
That music is bad for you. And,
really? Well, I was never told that music was bad
well, the
for
metal, you know, there was a lot of metal, you know, and, mm-hmm. And D&D, Dungeons and Dragons is how the devil will get you. You know, that kind of stuff.
You did you play Dungeons and Dragons?
I did. Okay. I did. This so I, was
I will a, make fun of you at a later date.
I was
for
a
that.
Kid in the 80s, right? Which
but
now
nobody went to hell because of Dungeons and
no,
Dragons.
No, it didn't. And
it's
we
a
don't,
silly
we
game.
We don't need to talk about that. Okay. It was almost parochial, right? The kind of environment,
as in parochial school, where they tell you that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, but like the culture. You know, the 80s were so. Remember, Just Say No.
No wonder you rebelled.
Right.
Holy smokes. I went to Catholic school and I wasn't even that oppressed.
And I wasn't literally oppressed because it wasn't about, mm-hmm. Charlie, do this. But the culture was this really, yeah. Look, just do it. Just do it the way we say and everything will be okay. And you'll go and you'll be rich. Wear the suit.
Mm,
and,
that's actually and, what Peter Thiel is saying, this idea of go to law school, go to business school, go to Wall Street, and everything will work out right.
Right.
Kind of a narrow-minded view of the world.
And so the things that people had reverence for, like true reverence for, mm. I was like, well, that doesn't work. That's bullshit. It's all bullshit.
Yeah, they had reverence for trickle-down economics in Wall Street.
Right down to
yeah, that
the
was
way
crap.
Pop music was being understood. Like yeah. the stuff that was older and that people kind of made fun of.
Like what, Bob Dylan?
No, like King Crimson, right? And some of the early Yes albums, Rush, that was
I
the
love
music.
Yes.
Well, yeah, and as well you should. The music I loved, it was both. It was what punk music had tried to remove. So even that rebellion, mm-hmm. right? I didn't care much for the Sex Pistols saying Pink Floyd,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I really liked Pink Floyd.
Yeah,
but I also hated CNC Music Factory being what was on the radio because that kind of boring. Techno was boring, you know.
Is that why you're here at WREK that doesn't play any traditional stuff?
I mean, a little bit, yeah. Certainly, that's why it appeals to me because I would much prefer to hear something that is hard to listen to than to hear something that is fun to listen to. That's my general attitude because I was rejecting
right.
all this stuff that people said, well, this is good.
Yeah.
You know, like even in high school, the people I talked to would say things like, why do you hang out with them? Meaning my friends,
mm-hmm.
you know, why do you, that's just, don't hang out with them. You should do it this other way.
But then when you asked, why do you say that? What did they say?
Well, I didn't. I wasn't smart enough at the time to question. I could do a lot of questioning authority, but that wasn't really what I was doing. I was just not doing what authority said.
Right.
So I never.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, questioning authority
is
and
very
finding
important.
Your own way
yeah.
is much more important than
I was
just being the contrarian that you are
yeah.
on this show on a regular basis.
Exactly. And so I never had a false reverence. I never had a reverence that was mm-hmm. The mistaken reverence that the author was talking about. I had sort of internal iconoclasticism. And I was very withdrawn and uninterested in engaging the world because mm-hmm. I had no interest in being part of what was going on. I had no interest in any of the things that were being offered to me as objects of reverence.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't until recently, I mean, maybe a little bit before I met my wife, that I actually started thinking again very seriously about what I was going to do and how I was going to engage society.
Mm-hmm. And then you develop reverence for things that are a bit more deserving of it?
Yeah, you know, like integrity, you know, and
yeah.
and you know, raising my children, right? And fidelity, right? Marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And these are things, like I always was existential, right? Excuse me, an existentialist. I believe that the only meaning we have is that which we make, you know, ourselves,
agreed.
Right?
Agreed.
And so reverence doesn't exactly enter into that, except as, you know, I respect
mm-hmm.
meaning I make, I respect the meanings that other people make.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and I am very dismissive of adopted meanings or shallow meanings that people take on.
But see, shallow, I agree with that. Shallow meanings and reverence or respect there too is, it's a judgment call. I mean, so there are people that worship the almighty dollar. Let me pick an easy one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't say that, you know, to try to make a little money to support your family, there's nothing wrong with that. But there are people that see money as the end. And actually, that's what Peter Thiel is talking about. He's saying money is really a means to an end, to do something different, amazing. And it may be something that you're passionate about. But so many of these people, they went to Wall Street, and that's what it was. Money was a means to an end. And people that actually brag about having money always just made me nauseous. Now, if you have money and say, look, I just bought this great boat. Come on out on the weekend. Let's go cruising down the cat. You know, enjoy stuff. So if money is, you do something to do something good or to enjoy life, you know, I think that's okay.
Money will spin your head around. I had a roommate in college who described himself as a communist, you know, mm-hmm. but then after he graduated and got his first job, he did tell me to my face, look, I'm the only person with a salary here. I'm the only adult in the house.
Mm-hmm. Were you like living with him at the time?
Yeah, we were roommates.
Oh, okay.
And
but he called himself a communist.
Previous to his career as a tech support.
Mm-hmm. No, but I believe in sharing the wealth. I believe if society takes its combined wealth and does do some redistribution to keep people from living in cardboard boxes, that's a good thing.
Sure.
But if you want to become super wealthy, that's okay. That's good for you. You can do that. No one's preventing you from doing that by actually having a little taxation and regulation.
you keep allowing your synapses to just fire. But
when we get down to this, basically, and we're agreeing with Paul, you should have reverence for that is worthy of reverence. We decide that.
Yeah, and so a little bit, I'm like, what the hell is this book about? You know,
you're right. He goes back to that which is like really awesome that we don't understand, and that's the philosophy.
He's talking about the sublime. You know, like be reverent of the mysteries of existence and be reverent of our essential heroic natures or something. You know, it's like, no, I'm not interested. You know, I mean, there's a reason why there's contempt of court, right? There's a reason why the defendant who gives the judge the finger on the way out of the
being
courtroom,
irreverent,
right? Being irreverent in the true sense, right? Mm-hmm. They are then punished harshly because the judge is the physical manifestation of the law, which we have.
I have reverence great for reverence the rule
for.
Of law.
Yeah, as well you should.
Yeah, that's right? An important concept, but when the laws are crazy, then you should work to elect officials to change those laws. I mean, for example, something John Oliver went off on a rant.
Wait. And we just started the path towards reverence as control. You know, look, I know you're angry, but the thing you should do is to follow the rule of law to change the law.
Yeah.
Right? Which is then how you get into trouble like Citizens United and you know, a clique of wealthy people who are
So the only answer is, why are we not pushing for
burn it all to the ground?
Oh, I'm not ready to do that yet.
Is that because of your nice house?
Well, and I also have things that government provides me. Roads, hospitals. I'm much more a fan of a constitutional amendment to get rid of Citizens United.
But if we take the kind of argument that we've condensed out of my not reading and your half remembered reading of reverence,
sorry,
renewing
Paul.
A long forgotten virtue. If I say no, look, I am reverent to the ideal that you know, if those in power mistreat us, then they should be slain, right? Like, you can kind of...
I think they should be kicked out of office.
Well, you can just make up your own thing you're reverent to.
Right, you can. That's absolutely, I agree.
And that, to me, means that basically he's writing a book about, hey, be thoughtful about your life. And I'm all for that.
And the things about which you are reverent.
Right, which is, you know, again, the circle. It just goes round and round and round. Because, you know, there's a bunch of people who are reverent to things that suck. And yet... he is now endorsing them also.
No, because I think he says things that suck you should criticize, what and things, that's not irreverence. But it's a judgment
the
call.
Person, yeah,
he's
the person
saying,
who reads
it's
that
up to you, Charlie.
Who loves God money and will do anything for him, you know, like what will they take from that book? It's like, oh yeah, I have reverence for money. You know, I have to, right. I have
it
to be reverent
good.
To the higher ideal.
He would say that money is not something worth being reverent
to. He would
to.
Say that, but he's, you know, he's like, oh, here's a, here's a tiger. All right, everyone, be sure you're not eaten by the tiger. It only eats people who are bad. Why is it coming back towards me? You know, like it's just, you know.
Well, now you're bringing up the emperor has no clothes kind of thing.
Am I?
Much of our society is, okay, I've been watching too many of the Republican debates.
Stop now. Stop. I refuse. This is a co-led podcast, and I'm not going to talk about the Republican presidential
nominee.
But
what I'm saying
debate.
Is lately, a lot of people are saying some really stupid stuff as though it is, you know, just obvious.
Stop for
it's
a
moment. Obvious.
Stop for a moment there. Why did you feel a need to say lately?
Lately, slightly more than normally. Well, because I've been watching, and I'm just like, oh my God.
Pete, bring it home, man. Bring it home.
I'm bringing it home with what we were talking about before. So, who was the nice blonde lady who works for Fox News? Megyn Kelly?
Why are you still talking about the debates?
Because this is how absurd things
finish
are.
With reverence. That's what I'm saying.
With reverence. I can't. It's you've got me all confused. I guess things worthy of your reverence are things worthy of your reverence. There it is. There's your tautology. There's your circular argument. But I think we are the people that have to determine what those things are. And maybe to some degree we are given the freedom to do that. He would claim to call people irreverent is a bad thing. If you're picking on something or making fun of something that is absurd or hypocritical, you're not being irreverent. You're actually being reverent to the idea that points out those things are absurd or hypocritical.
All right. Well, I feel like this book is basically meant to raise a question and then suggest, no, it's okay. You just don't worry about it. It creates a problem that it tries to solve. You could...
Done like any good academic book, and I'm going to end with a quote from Lur, ruler of Omicron Persei 8 from, what's the Matt Groening cartoon, Futurama?
Okay.
Your book confuses and enrages us.
Let's record another outro.
Okay.
Consilience with Pete and Charlie is a podcast about the intersection of science and the humanities. Why? This feels so fake.
Do it anyway.
Find us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, Bennett Radio and Pete Ludovus.
Or you can find us on the back porch of Rocky Mountain Pizza in Midtown Atlanta drinking cheap beer.